Boy, Lent is going awfully fast, isn't it? Here we are in the third Sunday already. And good reminder today to remember the things that we kind of committed ourselves to in terms of our Lenten discipline. Perhaps we've forgotten a few of them already. But to remind ourselves and rededicate ourselves and get back in gear and to do the things that we know we need to do in order to make this Lenten season a holy season and a time of renewal of our spirit and our faith. One of the themes that kind of we lift up during the Lenten season is the whole idea of covenant. I know a couple weeks ago I did share with you about that. The covenant, which is the bond between God and people of faith. There were many covenants down through history with the Old Testament folks. And each one, when the people and God formed these bonds, each one expressed and renewed the relationship between God and God's people. That's what Lent is for us, a renewal of the relationship between us and between our God. Each one time they formed a covenant, there was something that, words that were important, obviously, but each time they formed this covenant, it began by a litany. That's the first words of our first reading today. I was the God who led you out of Egypt, the land of slavery. In other covenants, God might have said, I was the one who led you across the sea. I was the God who led you through the desert. I was the God who gave you water from the rock. I was the God who gave you manna when you were hungry. A litany of all the ways in which God had been on the side of the people. Well, the line, I guess, in the first reading today that just overwhelms me is that God said, if you keep these commandments that I've given you today, it's all you got to do. They make total sense. If you keep these commandments, I will show mercy to you, get this, for 1,000 generations. God's mercy, God's love, God's presence, God being close to the people for 1,000 generations. Can you even imagine that? Someone who is so faithful to the covenant to make that promise. Well, in the gospel passage today, Passover is happening. And Passover is a pretty big festival in Jerusalem, and Jesus went to be a part of it. Jerusalem normally had maybe 9,000-10,000 people, but during Passover, that swelled to maybe 100,000 people everywhere. The economy of the whole year depended upon Passover, rooms to rent and food and restaurants and all the rest, let alone all the animals that would be sacrificed at the temple. So Jesus was there, and when he entered the temple area, he was enraged. He was enraged. It was noisy. It was a smelly place, all the animals and the people shoulder to shoulder, all the animals to be sacrificed. He was enraged because it was nothing like what the temple really should have been. He said the words, "My Father's house should be a house of prayer, but you've made it into a marketplace." The temple, the very presence of the temple, the purpose of it was misdirected, it was destroyed. The temple, in Jesus' mind, should have been a place of refuge and safety, a place where people come to reflect upon their lives and to encounter God, a place where people come to give thanks to God for the blessings and to be renewed in faith and in a relationship. That was so important. But here, the noise, the animals, the smells, everything was kind of crazy. It was a place where it was supposed to be intimacy, sacred intimacy with God. So that was the reason for, one of the reasons for the rage. But there is something else I think we probably should remind ourselves of. The people who were entrusted to help all those pilgrims and all those worshipers coming on the feast of Passover, the people that were to help them enter the sacred space and experience, they were abusing their role. They were exploiting the people for their own gain, selling. It became a marketplace, as Jesus said. One of the little bitty symbols in that moment when Jesus was driving out the animals and turning over the money changers' tables, one of the little images I think that's important was the pigeons, the doves. There were oxen and there were big animals, sheep and goats, but the doves, they were there because poor people could never afford one of the big animals. The poor people could only afford a few pennies for a pigeon. But yet, the money changers were abusing even the poor, gathering in their money. You know, that didn't happen just in Jerusalem years ago. It happens all the time in religion, even today. Televangelists, for example, with their multi-million dollar mansions and their airplanes. Over the years, I've just kind of listened to some of them, and some of them will have a 1 ounce bottle of oil. Send me some money and I'll send you this and it will heal you. Another, a tiny little bottle of water. Send me some money and I'll give you this little bottle of water. And I can remember one in particular had a little cloth, about like so. And the televangelist, he would put his hand on this cloth and he said, send me some money and you will have this sacred cloth in your home to touch and to believe in. Pretty crazy, I think, but I bet he made $1 million off of it. You know, and we Catholics, we're just as guilty of that. You know, the whole Protestant Revolution came about because Catholics bought money, bought indulgences. You've heard of that. Indulgences. In the church, or the Dominican especially, they were selling them right and left. Buy this indulgence and grandma will go to heaven out of purgatory. It was nuts. It was evil. And yet, even the Catholic Church kind of did some of those kinds of things. I can remember a few years ago, there were, I think, two big scandals in our own country about a couple of bishops. And one of them had spent $12 million on renovating his house in a city where there was a lot of poverty. Another one did kind of the same thing. But I remember a couple other bishops that have always been kind of, I've always held them in such high esteem. One was Bishop Topolot in Spokane, who, when he got to his diocese, the first thing he did was to sell the mansion. And he bought a little house in a neighborhood. He planted a garden. He gave away the produce. He kind of lived off the fact that neighbors gave him food to eat. He lived a life of poverty amongst the people to teach them the blessings of God. Another one closer to home, Bishop Dingman. Anybody know Bishop Dingman? Remember him? He was a bishop of Des Moines. And first thing Morris did when he came to the Diocese of Des Moines was sell the mansion. He didn't need a mansion. He got an apartment. One of the things that was so special about him was the fact that a couple times a month, maybe more, he spent and overnight in the jail. He would go and he would be with the prisoners in the Polk County Jail, talking, ministering, hearing confession. That's what the church is really supposed to be all about. So the fact that Jesus had enraged to drive out the animals and the money changers, it's a story that goes on and on and on. Well, Jesus said, after that great explosion, Jesus said, and the people were asking for a sign, okay? They wanted to, who gives you the right to do this, what you've just done? What's the sign that says that you're the one that should have driven out the animals and the money changers? So he said, tear this temple down, brick by brick, stone by stone. It happened 40 years after Jesus died. The Romans destroyed the temple. Tear this temple down and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. They must have just laughed at him, mocked him. 46 years it took to build it this far, and they weren't done yet. But Jesus said, tear this temple down and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. We know that he wasn't talking about bricks and mortar. He was talking about himself. Jesus himself was the temple. Jesus himself was the one who knew that he would be torn down and rebuilt in 3 days. You know, Jesus himself then has asked us in the covenant that we'll hear at Mass today, has asked us to become like him. What's that mean? We are to become like Jesus. We are to develop his attitudes, his love, his compassion, his mercy. We are to become the temple as well. The temple where the Spirit of God, Jesus himself, dwells with us and in us. Maybe a good question on this third Sunday of Lent. Is Jesus dwelling within you? Is Jesus walking with you? Have you invited him to walk along the paths of your life? So Lent is a covenant time, a renewal time, a rebirthing time, a time to see more clearly God's desire for us, God's desire to live with and in us. A litany. I think this is a suggestion I got for your prayer this week, okay? Just as the covenant between God and the people, I am the God who led you out of Egypt, the land of slavery, I would like you to think about a covenant between each one of us and God. What would God say? I was the God who blessed your life in abundance. I was the God who brought a powerful and deep love into your life. I was the God who led you through sickness in your life. I was the God who led you, who was with you through the death of your spouse. I was the God, over and over again, the blessings of God. Think about that. What are the covenant moments between you and between God? And how God's faithfulness touched your life. It might have been painful at the time, but to come to the knowledge and the conclusion that it was God who was there. How much? For 1,000 generations, God has journeyed with us. So, like the covenant in the first reading today, and like Jesus, who is the temple, it's the thing that helps us to take the next step, helps us to renew ourselves. Thank God we have Lent every spring. Helps us to renew ourselves and reawaken our faith and come to a deeper understanding and realization that our life for 1,000 generations totally is an experience of God's love, his tenderness, and his compassion. Think about God's covenant with yourself and give him thanks.